Welcome to The Roundup, a North Queensland-based podcast with regional content for regional clinicians. I'm Alyssa Hathaway, a GP and family planning clinician and head of JCU's clinical school here in Mackay. This collaborative podcasting project between North Queensland Regional Training Hubs, JCU, and our local regional hospital and health services will bring you a different regionally relevant podcast each fortnight. Before we begin, I'd like to acknowledge the traditional owners of the lands where we meet today, who were the original providers of healthcare in this region. On today's episode, we're talking about rural generalism with one of the superstars of rural generalism, Dr. Sarah Chalmers. Welcome, Sarah.
Thanks for having me, Alyssa.
Sarah is immediate past president of the Australian College of Rural and Remote Medicine, or ACRM. She is the medical superintendent on Palm Island and has had years of experience in rural and remote Australia, including a long stint in Arnhem Land and some time in Tennant Creek. You probably, Sarah, are the best placed person in Queensland to talk about rural generalism today. What was it about rural generalism that really drew you in, that made it so enticing for you?
That's a really good question to start with. When I went to medical school, I actually had an idea in my head that I wanted to be a rural doctor. We didn't talk about rural generalists back then. It wasn't, it wasn't a well-used term. It was probably really just in its infancy. Both my mum and dad are rural generalists, or what we now call rural generalists, and actually so was my grandfather back in rural New Zealand. I think when those lines about, if you can't see it, you can't be it. If you do see it, you can be it. There was that. My other big driver was that having grown up in small places, so when we moved to Australia when I was five, we lived in Gove or Nhulunbuy in East Arnhem Land, and then in Darwin, which back then was quite a small country town, and I really did not want to live in a big city, and so rural medicine was an obvious career choice for me.
Fantastic. And so you turned that into reality. How did you actually go about getting into rural generalism then, once that idea had really formed in your head?
So it was, without sounding super old, which of course I'm not, the opportunities that exist, certainly for medical students, but also for rural generalist registrars, didn't really exist back then. And so you kind of had to make your own way. One of the things that I knew that I wanted to do was to work back in the Northern Territory. It would be good to, the idea of returning home or back to a community that very much appealed to me. And I guess I had a chat to a few people along the way. So not my mum and dad, because you never ask your mum and dad for sensible advice.
No.
I know, and they would have just given me some big, long, boring lecture. So instead I went out looking for real doctors, which is how I thought of it at the time, and just said, what sort of things should I try and do before I go to my rural community? And again, we didn't really talk about ASTs. I didn't want to do obstetrics and anaesthetics, which were, skills that lots of rural doctors had at the time. So I decided that I was going to do emergency medicine. That was a recommendation that somebody suggested when I said I didn't want to do obstetrics and anaesthetics. So I spent much of my junior doctor years doing as much emergency medicine as I could. And then when I started my GP training, which was actually rural generalist training, I was already out in my remote community and I did my training there. And so when it came to thinking about what I wanted to do as a grown-up, as a fellow doctor, I was already doing it. So, that's kind of how it all happened.
Right. So you mentioned that you had gone through RACGP training in a rural generalist kind of location. Of course, these days we have the Australian College of Rural and Remote Medicine, which is another pathway, right?
That's correct. And so at the time, ACRM was, ACRM, so when I started my GP training, ACRM existed and I was a member. It's just that they didn't actually have a fully accredited AGPT training program at the time. And so the advice was to get an RACGP fellowship, but when I'm doing it in a remote place, to look at what they were proposing for ASTs, to look at the education modules and things that they already had up and running, and that they would help me, transition from my RACGP fellowship to my ACRM fellowship. So, both my mum and dad were foundation members of ACRM. And in fact, my mum, I'm pretty sure, was on the foundation ACRM board. And my dad was one of the original educators. So I knew it was coming. I just wanted to get my fellowship. That's what we want to do, right? We don't want to be registrars for too long because you get paid better, you get more opportunities once you've got your fellowship. So, I went ahead and got an RACGP fellowship. And then when ACRM was accredited, I completed some of the other parts of the assessment so that I had my FACRM. So I've got both fellowships.
Wow. So for anyone these days who's interested in rural and remote medicine, they could still go through either pathway, but the ACRM fellowship would usually be the one to go through. It is an acronym-dense industry that we're in. You did mention ASTs. You mean advanced skills training, don't you, Sarah? Did you want to talk us through how that works for ACRM, please?
So advanced skills training is a part of an ACRM fellowship. And it's not lots of people think of it as, you do your GP training and you add something else on. That is not what rural generalist training with ACRM is. Every single person who has an ACRM fellowship has completed their core module. So that's your core generalist training, which of course is you're working in a rural and remote community in primary care predominantly. But it also recognises that you can be doing your primary care in places other than a bricks and mortar general practice. So you might be doing it in a remote clinic. You might be doing it on a school veranda, which is where I did some of my core generalist training. But you can also do it in a hospital because in places where there aren't enough general practices and things, we do a lot of primary care in our emergency departments. To answer your direct question, an AST is your advanced specialist skill, and it is something that all, as I said, that all FACRMs have, and it is the extra part of your rural generalist training that makes you the part of the, I'm just trying to think of the right word, part of the efficiency, I think, that rural generalists offer. So it is, ACRM has 11 and there's always lots of talk about what other ASTs we could have. And so it's things like obstetrics. So you can get an advanced diploma in obstetrics and you can perform, more complex births, including emergency cesarean sections in rural and remote communities. You can do anaesthetics, and there's now recently started a diploma of rural generalist anaesthetics. And then there's other ASTs in mental health, Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander health, paediatrics, internal medicine. I'm not going to try and rattle them all off here, but essentially we go and do specialist training. So with non-GP specialists, often in the hospital setting, to have those extra skills that we can deliver more than just primary care in our rural and remote communities.
That's an incredible breadth of medicine that rural and remote specialists are offering then, isn't it? So an incredibly important part of our workforce to those most underserved communities across Australia. What
what is it that we need to know before embarking on a career in rural and remote Australia?
I think, so one of the things that's very apparent to me right now is that you actually have to practice a very different type of medicine to what you do in town. And what I mean by that is, you know, I mean, obviously we still follow the diabetes guidelines. We follow, you know, emergency protocols and, you know, medicine is medicine. But actually a lot of things that are just assumed as a normal part of medicine in towns and bigger and certainly in bigger cities is access to resources. And so one of the things that we get good at and in fact have to include as part of our special skills is the ability to work without machines that go ping. The most obvious one of those, for example, is a CT scanner. So, you know, I recently worked in a big city emergency department. And when someone comes in with, you know, almost any concern, you know, of a, you know, intracranial pathology, they get a head CT. Whereas when you're in a more remote area, you don't necessarily, you know, you can't go straight into a CT. Before you can get to a CT, you need, you know, a 2-hour ambulance ride or a helicopter trip or, you know, a boat ride. And it may not happen as an emergency. And so it makes you think a little more about do we actually need this? When you're taking someone out of their community, for example, so they might not want to leave the community, in which case, how are you going to manage this person without, for example, a CT scanner? So we work in low resource environments and we work in smaller teams. So we don't have, you know, people like to make jokes about a left knee surgeon or a big toe surgeon. So as we are true generalists, we don't just deal with primary care. We deal with anything that presents to us. And a lot of what would otherwise be managed by an emergency department or an orthopedic surgeon. So we, because of where we are, because of who we are and who we have to work with, we do actually have a massive breadth of clinical requirements. And so the other thing that we need, as well as, you know, understanding that that's the environment that we work in and that it is different, there's a group of rural and remote rural generalist academics who've come up with an extra skill. It's a bit like the force that rural generalists have, and they call it clinical courage. And I really like the term. The more I think about it, the more I like it. And it is that extra sense of maybe risk-taking, but also you know, using clinical skills, interpreting them, thinking about the whole person and what they, you know, what they are presenting with, where they come from, what they need, and being able to do things that are a little, maybe just bending the rules slightly or going outside of a scope, or, you know, it's all of those things kind of built in, and it means that we are probably slightly bigger risk takers, but actually we do a whole lot of risk mitigation so that to ensure that we're actually still working safely.
I love that. So rural generalists work with the force. They have that clinical courage. I think it's about becoming comfortable with that diagnostic uncertainty, isn't it, Sarah, which we don't feel comfortable with as junior doctors. And I think we become more courageous as clinicians with experience to try and learn that as a more junior doctor in a rural or regional setting is incredibly difficult, I imagine, but I do love the term. So we can train through RACGP or ACRM, and through ACRM, rural generalists have up to 11 different advanced specialist training skills that they can acquire. Usually it would be one or two of those advanced specialties. that they can then take out to their rural or remote location and performing a different type of medicine with limited resources, as you say. But Sarah, when you're practicing in Arnhem Land or on Palm Island, are you still truly alone like you would have been 20 years ago when you were first starting out? Surely there are some IT solutions that are helping to bridge the gap in those smaller communities?
So it still depends where you are, actually. So there are still, large pockets of, for example, Arnhem Land that don't have, full mobile phone reception services, and definitely have fairly sketchy internet connection. So they might be working on a portable satellite. So yes, you're right. In lots of places, you are less alone than you used to be. Before I talk about IT, though, we talk about single doctor posts, but whenever we're very rarely completely on our own. One of the other things that's really important about rural and especially remote medicine is the teamwork, the multidisciplinary teamwork. And we have, rural generalist nursing and allied health colleagues who work alongside us in our slightly crazy work situations, and so I think it's really important to recognize that when you say you're not alone, we were never alone. We were always working very, very closely with our colleagues, and I know that GPs and actually hospital doctors often talk about the teams-based approach, but when we talk about that in rural and remote medicine, we're talking about doctors working outside of a normal scope of practice. So we're not GPs, we're GPs that do a whole bunch of other things, but many of our nursing and allied health colleagues, our pharmacists, our OTs and physios and social workers and Aboriginal health practitioners are all working to a really broad scope, and we cross over and support each other a lot. So going back to the IT stuff, yes, you're right. We do use, we've been using digital health and telemedicine for way longer than everybody else has. So we had access, for example, to some Medicare rebates, and I can't remember when they started, to particularly around mental health, and have been, case conferencing with psychiatrists in remote, from our remote location. We had Medicare rebates for that I think, going back sort of 10 years or so. Wow. We also, we also do things like, when I was a young DMO in Arnhem Land, just starting my GP training, one of our roles when we were on call was to work with the remote area nurses and Aboriginal health practitioners out in remote communities. So they would ring us and describe to us what they could see, and we would interpret that and come up with a management plan. So, we've been doing that stuff for ages.
Right. So the rest of the primary care community is a bit late to the party, but finally we're on board thanks to COVID and the necessary changes to the Medicare item numbers that have eventuated from that. Hopefully we keep those for a long time. So, Sarah, the message that I'm hearing from you is that as a rural generalist, advocacy for our remote communities is incredibly important to make sure that the resources are adequately applied across the broad scope of our land, where some of those communities are going to be incredibly limited. And that might not be providing a CT scanner in remote Arnhem Land, but it might be just about making sure there's adequate phone coverage. How do you today advocate for your communities through the huge bureaucracy that is managing health in our country?
That's a really hard question. So advocacy is, it's a very broad term, and it can be as simple as writing, a letter to Telstra to say, just in case you weren't aware, half of or three quarters of houses in Palm Island don't have, adequate mobile phone reception, and as a matter of urgency, from a healthcare perspective, this should be, looked into and rectified. Right up to, talking to the federal health minister to explain to them just exactly why we need, a funded rural generalist pathway to ensure that, we have a career pathway that our junior doctors and medical students, for example, who might be listening to this and thinking, how am I going to do that? That sounds really hard. So, telling the health minister, these are the things that you have to do so that any junior doctor, who hears about the potential for a career in rural generalist medicine can walk up to, their director of training and say, I want to be a rural generalist. How can you help me? It's an enormous body of work to advocate for our communities. There are days when, I was the ACRM president did a lot of work, for example, to get access for our rural and remote medical, nursing and allied health colleagues to be vaccinated, for example, against COVID-19. And on the days where you get told that the first box of vaccines is actually making its way out to a remote community, specifically for the medical and health team, that's amazing and it feels great. You feel like you've really managed something. A lot of the time it feels like I just have a giant bruise on my forehead from banging my head against a brick wall because we're such outliers, I think, in medicine. Certainly in medicine in Australia and in much of the developed world, people are becoming more and more and more specialised. So much of our graduating medical school work, graduates are going, looking at that. They see that as part of their training and they think, yep, that's what I want to be because I see that and that looks fun and interesting and I can see how that is a very valuable, career to have. We don't have enough of our medical students seeing rural generalists in action. We don't have enough training going on in rural and remote Australia for our medical students and junior doctors to actually see it. Many of them don't even know that such a career exists, and they hear the stories from inside the hospital where, a rural doctor may have made a referral the consultant gets off the phone and says, that guy is an idiot. He doesn't really know what he's talking about. I suppose we'll have to rescue their patient kind of thing. There's really bad messaging, I think, in the big sent something institutions in Sydney and Melbourne.
Yeah. So, Sarah, what are the top tips for those aspiring rural generalists in our communities? What are the take-home messages from today's talk, do you think?
So the most important one is that a career as a rural generalist is, an incredible career. It can be extremely rewarding. It's varied it gives you an opportunity to, provide a service to a community where you can make a really, really significant difference to lots of people. So I would encourage anyone who's had any thoughts about it to go and talk to somebody who does this kind of work and find out, all of the good things about it. That's the most important bit. It's a really, really great thing to do. Secondly would be, you know, for medical students and junior doctors, you know, getting rotations in rural and remote communities and working with rural generalists and understanding what they do and, you know, finding out how they got there. And what are the good bits and the not so good bits, getting tips and tricks from people, you know, who are already doing that work. I guess having a look at the training pathways and, you know, particularly the rural generalist pathways that are popping up all over the country now, and the opportunities, I think, looking for opportunities to experience what it's like, so that you really understand just exactly what it is that you're getting into. Is that helpful? Oh,
I think it is. And I think the first opportunity that those students and junior doctors should be taking up is listening to this story about how fantastically rewarding rural generalism is from your firsthand experience, how interesting and streamlined training has become recently, how you get to truly work within a team who are working to their full scope of their capacity in their location, and how you're practicing a different type of medicine. With using the force as well. I mean, who's going to knock back that as an opportunity? Sarah Chalmers, thank you so much for your time today. We really appreciate learning about rural generalism.
Thank you, Alyssa, and thank you very much for the opportunity to talk about rural generalism, because I think the more we talk about it, the more normalised it will become.
Absolutely. Thanks, Sarah. For more information about the Roundup or to share your feedback and ideas for future episodes, visit nqrth.edu.au/roundup-podcast or contact us at nqrth.mackay@jcu.edu.au. We also want to advise that the views and opinions presented in this podcast are those of the speaker only and do not represent the views and opinions of James Cook University, Northern Queensland Regional Training Hubs, or Queensland Health. The content supplied in this podcast is not intended as medical advice and is for educational and entertainment purposes only. Northern Queensland Regional Training Hubs is an initiative of the Australian Government's Integrated Rural Training Pipeline, and is facilitated by James Cook University in partnership with public and private hospitals, Queensland Aboriginal and Islander Health Council, health services, Aboriginal community controlled health organisations, and general practice clinics.